Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches. Napa!
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide. Napa!
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
Top four make their way off of turn four. When they come through the tri-oval, they'll see the white flag. One more lap to go. If Corey Heim has got anything for Kyle Busch, he better pull it out now.
He's there. It was a truck length on entry at turn number one. Same story. Busch to the bottom. Heim through the middle, trying to build momentum off two for the final time.
Final shot for Corey Heim. Down the back straightaway. He's got a run. Here he comes into turn number three. Looking low. Busch throws the block. Now Heim will try upstairs.
Heim goes to the outside lane, now cuts across to the bottom. Kyle Busch comes off of turn number four, looking for the checkered flag and the win here tonight at the Texas Motor Speedway. It's Kyle Busch taking the checkered flag in the SpeedyCash.com 250, his 66th career win here in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series and sixth here in Texas.
Grateful we got the win today. I know Corey was working really hard behind me there. He pulled out all the stops. I couldn't get the top to work there late without my tires having more heat in them. But he was, and he almost got us. So, good race there.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you as we come off a thrilling weekend at Texas Motor Speedway and get ready to make our first run into Talladega, Alabama this weekend for the Geico 500 race weekend. On tonight's show, we'll do a full rundown of the Cup Series drivers with the longest active winless streaks. Chase Elliott just snapped his over the weekend at Texas, and it was at 42. There's some interesting names on this list that you're going to want to check out. We'll also preview Episode 9 of NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. We're getting ready to button up that podcast. Be sure to check this preview out. Also, Austin Hill is going to go for the win Saturday in Talladega. He won Daytona earlier, won Atlanta earlier as well. He'll try for win three of the year. And with NASCAR returning to Talladega, we discuss what it takes to lead the pack when it matters most. Plus, we'll take a trip down memory lane to relive a wild day in NASCAR history. But first, Kyle Rickey is here with a check of the latest headlines in NASCAR. Kyle?
Mike, the NASCAR Cup Series will head to a super speedway for the third time this season as the series heads to Talladega. The entry list for Sunday's Geico 500 will feature the return of Cody Ware as he makes his first NASCAR start since being suspended on April 10, 2023, due to charges of assault that were later dropped last December. Ware will drive the number 15 car for Rick Ware Racing, the team he drove for full-time before his suspension. Kaz Grala has driven the number 15 car through the first nine races of the season. Also on the entry list for Sunday's Cup Series race is Shane Van Gisbergen. The New Zealander, who made history last year at the inaugural Chicago Street Course race, will make his first career Cup Series start on an oval as he'll be behind the wheel of the number 16 Chevrolet for Colleg Racing. The NASCAR Xfinity Series Dash for Cash returns for its third race this weekend in Talladega. Sam Mayer, who won in a photo finish at Texas Motor Speedway for his fifth career Xfinity win and second Dash for Cash prize of his career, will be joined by Ryan Sieg, Justin Allgaier, and AJ Allmendinger in this week's installment as another $100,000 prize is on the line in the AgPro 300. Mike?
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, we'll explore NASCAR Cup Series drivers who are in search of a much-needed win.
Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, designs and manufactures reliable and powerful warning lights, white illumination lighting, sirens, controllers, and warning systems for the automotive, aviation, and mass notification industries worldwide. Whelan products are designed, sourced, and manufactured in America and tested on site to meet the toughest industry standards. Whelan Engineering, manufactured in America for over 70 years. We never left, and we're here to stay.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Over the weekend, Chase Elliott went back to victory lane for the first time since the fall of 2022. And he isn't the only big-name driver that's looking to end a long winless streak. Our Tim Calafambo is here to fill you in on the 10 other Cup regulars who are looking to end a 40-plus race winless streak this weekend at Talladega.
In no other sport is it harder to reach the mountaintop than in the NASCAR Cup Series. On a weekly basis, there is only one winner and over 30 proverbial losers. Getting to victory lane just once is hard, but getting back there is even harder, especially in the days of the Gen 7 race cars. We are seeing more different winners than ever before, but at the same time, that means there are more cars capable of winning on a weekly basis than at any other time in the sport's history. This is perfectly illustrated by the fact that there are 10 former Cup Series winners who are on winless streaks of 40 races or more. That number was 11 until Chase Elliott went to victory lane for the first time since October of 2022, this past weekend in Texas. With the sport's most popular driver finally off the schneid, the focus now turns to this man's quest for his 36th career win.
Michael McDowell goes to second. Kevin Harvick goes to the high side in third. Here comes Michael McDowell looking to the inside, but Brad Keselowski, the leader, off turn four.
Crowd on their feet. Here they come, racing back to the checkered flag. They're crashing further back. Eric Jones is involved. Here comes Michael McDowell pulling alongside. It won't be enough. And Brad Keselowski has picked up the win, scoring the victory in the Geico 500 at Talladega by a mere inches.
It is hard to believe that this weekend will mark three full years since that last victory for Brad Keselowski. The streak for the 2012 Series champion sits at 107 races, by far the longest of his career. A lot has changed for Brad since that last victory, most notably the fact that he left Team Penske following the 2021 season to become a driver and part owner at Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. Brad has certainly had his chances to get back to victory lane, finishing second four times during his dry spell, including being the runner-up to Chase Elliott just a few days ago. This weekend would seem to be a prime opportunity for Keselowski to capture another checkered flag. Not only was Talladega the site of his last Cup Series win, but a place where he's won a total of six times in the Cup Series, more than any other racetrack. While Keselowski will certainly have a lot of eyes on him this weekend, he isn't the only former Cup Series champion looking to get back to victory lane.
For the second time in his career, up off turn number four, checkered flag in the air, Joey Logano wins the NASCAR Cup Series season finale race, and Joey Logano is the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series champion.
Many viewed that 2022 Series championship and victory at Phoenix Raceway as something that could signal an era of dominance in the next-gen race car for Joey Logano. But surprisingly, Joey has only won once since then, last spring at Atlanta, meaning it has been 40 races since he's finished in the top spot. Logano has been extremely close to winning numerous times since then, finishing second three times in the last 40 races, including earlier this month at Richmond Raceway. Logano, like Keselowski, is no slouch at Talladega, having won there three times, most recently in 2018. In addition to Keselowski and Logano, there are two other former Talladega winners who are hoping to recapture some of that magic this Sunday.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in that position, he will cross the line and win the Geico 500.
Bubba Wallace has been deemed the winner of the Yellowwood 500 at Talladega. Bubba Wallace, the winner at Talladega, his first ever career win at the NASCAR Cup Series level.
Talladega has been a place where drivers are able to get their first career victories, and two of the most recent to do so are Bubba Wallace and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Both drivers have already proven those wins weren't flukes by getting back to winner's circle, but it has now been 52 races since Bubba's last win at Kansas in the fall of 2022, and 44 races since Stenhouse's triumph in the 2023 Daytona 500. The closest those drivers have come since those victories is a third-place finish for Wallace at Texas last year, and a fourth-place run for Stenhouse on the dirt at Bristol. While the 2023 Daytona 500 champion is looking to get back to victory lane for the first time in over 40 races, it has been even longer for the 2022 winners at Daytona.
A whole bunch of Fords at the front of the field, and here they come. Cindric trying to squeeze Blaney into the fence, and at age 23, Austin Cindric has scored the Daytona 500 win.
Here he comes, up off turn four. Last-ditch effort from Austin Cindric. Can't do it. Checkered flag in the air. Austin Dillon wins the Coke Zero Sugar 400 at Daytona.
A win at Daytona is huge for any driver, but it just makes you hungry for more. And that has been the case for Austin Cindric and Austin Dillon since the 2022 season. Austin Cindric has been looking to get back to victory lane for 80 races now, while it has been 55 races since Austin Dillon's win in the 2022 Coke Zero Sugar 400, which secured his playoff spot for that year. The closest either driver has come to returning to victory lane since those moments was Cindric's runner-up finish at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course in 2022. There are three more big-name drivers on our list who are looking to get back to victory lane for the first time since the 2022 season.
Mistake-free and a day he will never forget. Off four, final time. Checkered flag is out. Career win number one for Chase Briscoe across the line, and Briscoe will win. Do you believe it? And here comes Alex Bowman, and he will win this afternoon. Here comes Eric Jones all by himself off turn number four. Denny Hamlin, one last shot won't be enough. And Eric Jones is a two-time Southern 500 winner.
Alex Bowman, Chase Briscoe, and Eric Jones are all names that NASCAR fans wouldn't be surprised to see win a race on any given weekend. But all three haven't done so in 50-plus races. In the 77 races since Chase Briscoe's first career win at Phoenix, he's finished fourth five times, including at Talladega last spring. It has now been 54 races since Eric Jones brought the number 43 car to victory lane at Darlington in the 2022 Southern 500. And it has been an even 70 starts for Alex Bowman since he hit the jackpot at Las Vegas in March of 2022. Bowman has been extremely close to ending that streak on two different occasions. He was bested by Ross Chastain in a classic finish at Circuit of the Americas in 2022, and was just inches behind his teammate William Byron when the caution flag flew that ended this year's running of the Daytona 500. This weekend at Talladega, truly anything can happen, and it certainly wouldn't be a shock to see a long winless streak end for the second week in a row.
Coming up, we'll preview the penultimate episode of our podcast series, NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Hey everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. This week, we released episode 9 of our new podcast series, NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. The series does a deep dive on the 2004 season and the implementation of the first ever chase for the Nextel Cup. This week, we relive Hendrick's emotional triumph at Atlanta, Dale Earnhardt Jr. putting on a show at Phoenix, and a controversial visit to Darlington Raceway. Here's a sneak listen. So after a hectic and headline-filled day, the sport would travel to Phoenix Raceway, with points opportunities starting to dwindle. Kurt Busch and Jimmy Johnson were atop the leaderboard of the chase, with Jeff Gordon sitting in third, Mark Martin in fourth, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. in fifth. After posting the fastest time in practice and qualifying for the fourth straight week, Ryan Newman will lead the field to the green flag in front of 105,000 fans in attendance.
Pace truck pulling in behind the pit wall. They come out of turn number four, move into the front straightaway. They're about 150 feet away from the start-finish line. Green flag goes in the air, and we're underway in the Checker Auto Parts 500. They race hard to turn number one, get single file among the first two, scrambles back at third place.
That's where Casey Kane and Joe Nemechek race side by side. Kane very strong on the outside lane, will grab third. Now going to work on Brian Vickers for second.
Single file for the top five positions. It's Ryan Newman opening up a gap over Brian Vickers of a car length and a half. Casey Kane in that third spot. Joe Nemechek in fourth. Everybody riding the bottom for turns three and four.
Newman will lead 59 laps, but this day would be about Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jeff Gordon. After a short rain delay, Gordon led 100 of the scheduled 312 laps. Dale Earnhardt Jr. would also spend some time out in front. The two drivers battled it out and put on a show for the spectators in Avondale, Arizona.
Earnhardt on the back bumper of Gordon, looking for room to race, looking for the lead on the back straightaway.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. is right there. He looks briefly to the inside as they fly through the dogleg up the back straight at Phoenix. Oh, Earnhardt Jr. almost made contact with Gordon, but he didn't need to. Down to the inside line of turn four, side by side for the lead off turn four.
It will be a dead heat at the start finish line. Door to door, they go back into turn number one. This is for the win. There are nine laps to go. They go back to turn two.
Almost leaning on each other. Dale Earnhardt Jr. to the lead at Phoenix. Jeff Gordon falls in line in second. Casey Mears trying to track him down from third.
Fans are stomping up and down in the grandstands at Phoenix as Dale Earnhardt Jr. tries to open up the lead by a car length over second place man Jeff Gordon. And third place man is Casey Mears and Kevin Harvick.
Here comes Junior off turn four, down to the start-finish line. It will be eight laps to go, and he's checking out. Pulling away now by nearly a second over Jeff Gordon.
As Junior started to pull away, something unpredictable happened.
Both Evernham cars are having problems. Jeremy Mayfield is off the pace. Casey Kane's problem, Mike Bagley, looks like maybe it's a tire
rub. Casey Mears
rub.
Loses it in turn number one. Mears around and into the outside wall. Casey Mears loses control. The target dodge slams into the outside wall in turn one.
That will bring out the yellow flag for the 11th time. Caution is on the field with just some six laps to go. Let's go back to turn two.
Casey Mears is in the wall, and Robbie Gordon is putting a smoke screen up here in turn number one, all almost simultaneously. Casey Mears came into turn one. Tire problem sent him spinning into the outside wall. The window net is down. Casey is fine. And at the same time, Robbie Gordon goes up in a cloud of smoke, and it looks like he's dusting for mosquitoes now as smoke continues to billow from the singular wireless Chevrolet.
NASCAR would make the decision to extend the race with a green, white, checkered flag finish, and Dale would have to fend off the pack one more time.
Here comes the field off turn number four to the start-finish line. Green flag is waving. Junior on the gas, trying to get away from Jeff Gordon, but Jeff stays right with him.
Everyone single file coming into the corner except Casey Kane. He'll go to the outside of the racetrack. Battles on for third. Ryan Newman slips. Harvick tries to take advantage as Earnhardt leaves the wall in his dust.
And he is pulling away by some 5 to 6 car lengths over Jeff Gordon, who's under attack from Ryan Newman. Newman takes his dodge down low into turn three. Kevin Harvick leaning on Casey Kane.
Ryan Newman's going to take second place away, if he can, from Jeff Gordon. Gordon's got a lot of horsepower in the front straightaway. Four cars locked up for second place. Ryan Newman, Casey Kane, Kevin Harvick. They go to one.
Earnhardt's gone. He'll be the winner this afternoon, but they are knotted up double wide, three rows deep for second. Yep. Here's Ryan Newman to the inside of Jeff Gordon for the final time.
Jeff Gordon, Ryan Newman, Casey Kane, Kevin Harvick, and Jimmy Johnson. Tight pack of five cars racing for the second spot, but it's all going on way behind the leader, Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Budweiser Chevy comes pouring off turn four for the second year in a row. He will win the Checker Auto Parts 400. Ryan Newman squeezes by Jeff Gordon. He gets the second spot. Gordon gets third. Kevin Harvick finishes fourth. And Casey Kane comes in fifth.
You can catch that full episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Coming up, Austin Hill stops by.
Grasping in your hand, nothing stopping you. Not a chair, creaky stair, or even engine repair. Grasping in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make your lawn, make your John, or that kitchen hat on. Grasping in your hand, nothing stopping you.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. No Xfinity Series driver has performed as well as Austin Hill has on Super Speedways. Austin has won the last three season openers at Daytona. He also has three wins at Atlanta since its reconfiguration. And Talladega is a place that he wants to feel those winning ways. He has yet to claim the checkers there. How does he plan to change that? Well, he joined our Steve Post to discuss exactly that.
I know you didn't get the result on Sunday with your Cup Series 2024 debut, but the opportunity to run Cup races with RCR and what you did learn before the steering issue, how was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot different than the Xfinity car, obviously. Sure. I mean, the Xfinity car, you lean on the right rear quarter panel, and I drive off kind of the right rear a lot of the times with the Xfinity car. I'm always complaining about being on the tight side for the most part, so... You know, going to the Cup car, you don't really have that sensation of like leaning on the right rear quarter panel. I think that's why you see a lot of guys, you know, bust their butts, because they don't really know where that limit is. And I was trying to figure it out. I don't think I ever really fully figured it out, but it was a lot of fun getting out there and mixing it up with the Cup guys. We played some strategy, which was cool to get inside the top 10 or top five, rather. Started on the front row on that one restart. And then unfortunately, we had a steering issue. I actually thought we had a, you know, really fast United Rentals Chevrolet, just unfortunate ending to what could have been a pretty positive day for us.
It's got to have you pumped up about your next start in the Cup Series then, I would think.
No, definitely, yeah. You know, I think I got to brush it up on the qualifying side of things. Dirty air is huge in the Cup cars. You know, we complained about the dirty air on the Xfinity side, and in my debrief on Monday, I was like, scratch that. We don't even need to ever complain about dirty air on the Xfinity cars, because the Cup cars, it's a lot about dirty air and trying to find clean air and things of that nature. So my car drove totally different when I went from 30th all the way to the front row. It was like a total different race car. So, but like I said, I had so much fun. I learned a lot. Can't wait to go to Kansas again with RCR and see if we can run all the laps and have a good, decent finish.
Fascinating the differences, that's for sure. Of course, the NASCAR Xfinity Series, so much success, and we're going to Talladega Super Speedway. I still resist the phrase restrictor plate racing, but speedway racing. First and foremost, and you even won in the Truck Series, your first win was at Daytona. What has there been about that that's just been right up your alley?
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked this question a lot, yeah. And, you know, when I first got asked the question, I didn't really think too much about it, and I'm like, I don't feel like I do anything different. But going back and watching races back and really putting a lot of effort into viewing these speedway races, you know, I think obviously I have a really good team behind me with RCR, and we have some really fast Chevrolets when we come to these super speedways, but you know, I think I just make a lot of the right decisions at the right time. I take all the runs that I can get, and even if they don't work out, then I learn from it early in the race and try not to make that same mistake twice going, you know, in late in the run. You know, I do think some kind of luck is involved, but if you can position yourself inside the top four or five and, you know, be in those first two or three rows, you have a higher percentage of getting the job done. So that's kind of always been my mindset when I go to these super speedways. I don't like to be one of those guys that rides around the back, and then, you know, when it's go time, you try to get up through the field. I like to kind of control the race all day if I can. And like I said, I just take all the runs. I'm aggressive. And I think the mental game is huge. You know, you can mentally screw yourself up and listening to your spotter. I mean, I have a really, really awesome spotter with Derek Nealon, and him and I work really well together, and we make all the right moves at the right time, and we learn early in the race. And I think that just works for us.
You talk about being aggressive. The challenge to me when I look at these styles of races is survival, also being there to the end. Is there a point though where you talk about you make all the moves, but is there a point where it's like, oh, I better make sure we're here to the end? How do you balance that?
Yeah, it definitely is a balance. You know, there are times and moments in the race that I may not make a move that maybe I would have made on lap 5 or 10 of the race. Maybe it's later in the race and I'm running 7th, 8th in line, and say they got the top rolling. I want to really try to strategically make the right move at the right time. I don't want to just pull out of line. I was actually watching the Talladega race back from last year, just before coming here, and I made a bad move at the wrong time. It was still, I think, 20 to go, and I ended up trying to pull out of line, take the lead, and I was second in line, and they had kind of the choo-choo train going up top, and I ended up losing a lot of spots. I had to come back up through the field, got back up to the front, inside the top five, and then ended up in a wreck. So I think if I would have been a little more patient there and not tried to make that move so early, we could have possibly been ahead of the wreck that ended up eventually happening. So I'm constantly learning, you know. I mean, we've won a lot of these things, and we always seem to find ourselves up front. Talladega has been one of those racetracks that, for whatever reason, we're always leading and we're always competing, but we haven't gotten the job done. So hopefully this weekend we can put it all together.
Are there subtle differences? Because you're right. Your numbers are gaudy at Daytona. Your numbers at Atlanta are really, really good, and yet you're still at a goose egg at Talladega. Are there subtle differences in differences with running Talladega?
Yeah, there are differences. You know, the track's so much wider, so there's a lot more lanes that you have to protect. So if you're leading the lane, you have way more to maneuver. You know, say if you're all the way in the top lane and the bottom lane's coming, well, you got a lot more distance to get to that bottom lane. So, you know, when you go to block a run, there's just more racetrack to where, okay, you block me, I'm just going to keep going up the racetrack because there's just a lot more racetrack. Where Daytona and Atlanta both, there's only so far you can go at Daytona and Atlanta. It's a little bit tighter of a track. So I think it makes the runs that are coming and the way you block them and stuff a little easier. And you know, Talladega just hasn't been good to us. You know, we've had those races where we run up front all day, and you know, the last two times that we've been to Talladega, we've ended up on the hook. So it's just one of those things that, you know, there's a lot that goes into Talladega that's a little different with the lane changes and things of that nature, but also just being there at the end, and for whatever reason we haven't been there at the end when it matters.
Are you the type of guy that stuff nags you? Do you have a list of why is that starting to become one of those little things?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, I feel really confident about these super speedways. Yeah. And since we haven't gotten the job done at Talladega, and it's a really cool trophy that you get at the end of that thing, it's one of those things on my list. I want to get it checked off. You know, I get told all the time that I'm the super speedway guy. Well, we got to go get the job done at Talladega if we're going to be considered the super speedway guy. So that's something on the list that we got to check the box on.
Well, we wish you well in getting it. The Ag Pro 300 Motor Racing Network, 3:30 Eastern time on Saturday afternoon. Austin, we wish you well down at Talladega.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Coming up, we'll dive into what it takes to lead the pack at Talladega and what drivers expect this weekend in the Geico 500.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy in four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Ryan's out here for Ryan Blaney, four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. This weekend, NASCAR returns to Talladega Super Speedway for the first of two visits in 2024. The 2.66-mile track is one of the toughest places to hold on to a lead, considering the pack-style racing that has evolved since the introduction of this next-generation race car. So how difficult is it to lead the pack and win at Talladega? Our Kyle Rickey is here to take us through what drivers might expect this weekend.
After a short track swing and a trip to a treacherous intermediate track in the Texas Motor Speedway over the last month, the NASCAR Cup Series now returns to Alabama and the Talladega Super Speedway for the 10th race of the 2024 season. Super Speedway racing this season has been a bit of a mixed bag. The final stage of the Daytona 500 was as captivating as racing can get, and the hybrid that is the Atlanta Motor Speedway produced one of the most thrilling finishes in NASCAR history. On the other side of the coin, there is the fuel mileage racing that we saw in the mid-portions of the 500. Drivers and some fans have voiced their frustrations that this has become part of speedway racing. Ryan Blaney admits to being one of those frustrated drivers, but also admits to committing to his strategy even before other drivers.
I think everybody hates the fuel-saving aspect of it, you know, and I mean, no one wants to watch it. We don't want to do it, but we have to do it because it affects our race, and so we're going to do whatever we can to have our race go the best it can, and that's saving gas before the stop. So it's just one of those weird things right now that is just in the Cup Series and a part of the Speedway racing package, and, you know, the less fuel you can take, the more you're going to jump up there, and just because it's hard to kind of get a third lane going is tough, and then the time you gain on a green flag stop, you just kind of jump everybody. So that's been our strategy. I feel like our group kind of figured it out before others, and then we were able to really do well and kind of find ourselves in spots to win those races. So, yeah, the fuel save side is, I don't think it's going to be much different. I mean, until you change stages or change fuel cells, I mean, it's, or, you know, fueling systems, it's going to be the same thing, just part of the game.
Brad Keselowski also admits the fuel saving has changed how you get to the front and stay out front. But the style does have positives and negatives.
I would say the racing with the next-gen car has become, you know, significantly more about fuel and fuel saving on the Speedway races. And in some ways, that makes it easier to get to the front because there's a lot of guys saving fuel. In other ways, it makes it harder to stay up front because when the pit cycle happens, if you don't execute it perfectly and if you need more fuel than others, you lose the track position. So there's parts to like and parts to not like about it. I think it's just different. You know, the old car was more side draft dependent, harder to save fuel with, and those types of things. So it was a different type of racing, and the racing just continues to evolve. The way the manufacturers have really bonded together, evolved the racing again. And so as it continues to morph, there's not really a clear playbook to being able to win those races other than to execute the last pit stop and be up front in the end.
One driver who seems to have mastered super speedway racing in the Gen 7 race car is William Byron. Byron has two wins at Atlanta and one at Daytona in the past three seasons and figures to be a favorite this weekend at Talladega. With three wins already in 2024, Byron's postseason berth is more than secure, but he says there is still plenty to focus on at Talladega this weekend.
Our drafting has been pretty good, but you never know how much, you know, you don't want your luck to run out in a sense. So you just got to be a good pusher, got to be able to get pushed well, do all the little things right. You know, I think we know in the Cup Series who the good drafters are, and there's a few out there to try to work with and be around, and just try to have a solid weekend. You can't really control the result there, but you can try to get some good stage points and try to be a good drafter and learn, you know, because that race in the playoffs is huge.
While Byron's focus this weekend might be on earning stage points and gathering data for the playoffs, other drivers have their eyes only set on victory lane. One of those drivers is Ryan Preece. Preece and the entire Stewart Haas Racing organization has had a ton of speed at Super Speedways recently, but they don't necessarily have the finishes to show for that speed. What will it take to close out one of these races? Preece says the answer to that question is more complicated than it might seem.
It is so tough. I would say our cars drive really well, and obviously they're fast. But if you lose track position in that final stage and you aren't in the top five or top 10, probably not going to have a shot at winning that race. But then at the same time, if you are in the top five or top 10, there's a pretty good chance that the wreck's going to happen in second or third place, because that seems to be where it's been over the past few years. So some of my best finishes on a super speedway have come when I've been completely out of the race in the final 10 laps. I've either gotten a penalty or came off pit road and lost the draft, and they wreck with 10 to go, and you just end up in a good situation. But I don't think any of us can really do anything different as far as working together. I think it's just understanding the momentum. You and your spotter have to be really keyed in with each other and understanding when to move lanes and how to stay up front. You know, sometimes you can just end up there just by being patient and staying in a lane, but the real craft is when you get there, you got to stay there.
A driver who certainly has momentum heading into Dega is Carson Hocevar. Hocevar is coming off of scoring his first career top 10 at Texas. To score another top 10, he'll have to master the draft at Talladega. And while the feel of the pack certainly has some obvious differences when moving up to Cup from the Truck Series, according to Hocevar, it isn't quite as different as some would expect.
It's actually pretty similar. You know, obviously the bumpers line up a little bit more and the Cup car is a little bit more stiff, so you can kind of lock on a little easier. But the draft itself, when it works out, it's actually pretty similar, and you can get a little bit more organized, obviously, in the Cup car. I think it's just more depth of 20, 30 guys really know how to push and really find their limits, where in the truck, you know, there's a little bit more of a skill gap there of just experience and knowledge of how to give a push and how to time momentum and runs. But they're actually, I think, a lot similar. You know, it would kind of be always around the bottom, and then the top could form, but when the bottom's really organized, the bottom's pretty dominant.
While speedway racing has evolved over the last few years, there is still a science to getting to victory lane, hence why we tend to see the same drivers up front in these races. Where do they need to be on the final lap to have a chance for the win? Ryan Blaney tells us.
Gosh, you kind of got to be in like the first three rows. You're kind of doing something. You're contributing to that lane. If you're fourth, fifth row on back, you're not really doing anything to that lane. Like, you can shove all you want, but you're just kind of stacking everybody up. So the first three cars kind of do something. So that's really where you want to be. And then just depends on the situation you're in. If you're leading your row, okay, your job has changed from when you're second or third. So you just kind of figure out what spot you're in, and you just hope that you get a chance, you know, on the last lap to kind of poke out there and get a good run at the good time, or block the run that is coming. So first three rows.
So can Blaney score yet another victory at Talladega? Can Byron add a Dega trophy to his already impressive Super Speedway resume? Or could a lucky seventh win at NASCAR's biggest, baddest, fastest track and a 107-race winless streak for Brad Keselowski? We'll all find out together in Sunday afternoon's GEICO 500.
That Talladega preview was brought to you by Whelan Engineering. Whelan Engineering is proud to be an official partner of NASCAR and serves as the official warning lights of NASCAR. Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, has been manufacturing in America for over 70 years. We never left, and we're here to stay. Coming up, we'll relive one of the most controversial finishes in NASCAR history.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. 20 years ago, NASCAR introduced a new rule that would change the way we address cautions at the end of races. As we discussed in episode 3 of our new podcast series, NASCAR Live presents 2004 Chasing History, that rule was created due to a wild series of events that transpired in the spring of 2004 at Talladega. Our Susie Armstrong is here to guide us through that controversial afternoon.
April 25th, 2004, the date that would change NASCAR forever and lead to an implementation of a rule we still abide by to this day. So let's get you up to speed on the background of this moment in history. At the time, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was the most dominant super speedway racer in the sport. Throughout his career, Dale had earned the respect of his peers, and it was expected that he would find his way to the front at tracks like Daytona and Talladega. The results spoke for themselves. Jr. had won the Daytona 500 to start the season after a strong speed weeks and was becoming the face of the sport. Jr. would earn 6 career victories at Talladega, but in the spring of 2004, a different driver was ready to unseat him from his super speedway throne.
The Aaron's 499 about to get the green flag. It is in the air and they are underway. Down to the inside goes Ricky Rudd, outside Michael Waltrip. They'll race door to door. They'll stay that way as they get over to turn number two. Right now, everybody's a bundle of nerves as they go to one.
Almost a pedestrian pace as they hit the banking in turn number one for the first time. It'll take nearly a full lap for these machines to come up to full song, but they remain side by side and inches apart. Ricky Rudd low, Michael Waltrip up high.
As the Aaron's 499 unfolded and the laps dwindled, Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart, and Jeff Gordon would pace the pack. But with 28 laps to go, a familiar face would make his way to the front.
He's sitting down at Talladega. Dale Earnhardt Jr. back out front. Michael Waltrip goes second, but from third on back, they're two and three wide as the crowd goes crazy here at Talladega. Jr. out front of Michael Waltrip.
Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt Jr. battled back and forth up until there were just five laps remaining. At that point, something unexpected happened.
Jeff Gordon down low. Gordon has drafting help from Kevin Harvick and Robbie Gordon. Earnhardt has drafting help from Jimmy Johnson. Gordon goes to the lead. Now they're side by side for second.
And Jeff Gordon is out front, but Dale Earnhardt Jr. No, travel now. Looks like Brian Vickers goes around. Ricky Rudd may have gotten into him. The spinning car of Brian Vickers sliding down on the inside of the apron.
Caution flag is displayed at lap 183 as Earnhardt Jr. leads him back down to the start-finish line. Again, the problem occurring between turns 3 and 4.
When the caution flag waved, NASCAR froze the field and deemed Gordon the leader. The next question at hand was whether or not NASCAR's safety team had enough time to clear the track before the race ran out of laps.
Now the chief starter here has the white flag in one hand, getting ready to display it. The caution flag is still displayed, so I think that's pretty indicative of the fact that this is going to end under the caution flag here this afternoon, and Jeff Gordon will get the win, his first of the 2004 season. Tough. A lot of folks are not going to be very happy with the way this thing turned out, but that's just the way it turned out.
What was the difference between you and Gordon there at the end, Dale?
Wasn't no difference. I thought I was ahead of him before the caution came out, but apparently NASCAR has a different opinion, but we'll just see what they show us and go with that.
Jeff, you seem about as excited as you've ever been in victory lane. Congratulations.
Well, anybody needs to be excited about getting to victory lane. Especially, beating those DEI cars is so difficult to do, and we did everything we could. I didn't know, whether I was ahead of them or not there at the end, but I knew I was ahead of them going into three, and I know it's going to be controversial, but I don't care.
Chaos ensued. Fans were outraged with NASCAR's decision to finish the race under caution and proceeded to pelt beer cans, bottles, and whatever they could muster onto the track. A scene MRN's Dave Moody hopes never happens again.
I had never seen anything like it, and quite honestly, I hope I never do again. I think, NASCAR Nation kind of showed its worst side that day. I understand that they were upset. I understand that their guy didn't win. A lot of that unhappiness came from the fact that the rules had changed since the previous year, and a lot of people just didn't understand the rule change and expected that they were going to re-rack and give everybody a chance to race one more lap for the checkered flag. And when that didn't happen, the combination of their guy not winning, not understanding the rules, Jeff Gordon inheriting the win, who at that time was not the most popular guy on the planet due to the fact that he'd won far too many races for some people's taste, it just kind of all compounded and turned into a very ugly reaction by our fan base that, again, I hope we never see the likes of again.
Because of what transpired that spring in Talladega, NASCAR would implement a new overtime rule later that season. The rule allowed for additional laps where a green-white checkered flag finish would transpire when cautions prevent the race from finishing under green. It may have made the crew chiefs and drivers' jobs a little more difficult when it came to strategy, but Greg Biffle and Jeff Burton both think it was the right thing to do for the fans.
I think that the fans deserve to see the race finish under green. I think there's a limit to that as well. I like the fact that they only did it a couple times. I think it was different when they first implemented it. I don't remember. But I like it. I really like that. You don't like it when you're leading and it's two to go and the caution comes out. But it's for the sport, for the better of the sport, I like it. I feel like it helps. And I did have some experience doing that. you know, in the Truck Series prior to them implementing it.
I do remember that moment where it got ugly. And certainly we don't want fans voting with their beer cans. But in retrospect, I think it's pretty simple to think. We talk about all the changes. It's pretty simple to understand why racing back to the caution wasn't a good idea, and how giving fans an opportunity to see a green-white checkered, how that is a good idea. So we can talk about all the changes not being good, but some of them were certainly good.
So just like that, 20 years ago this month, a spring afternoon in Talladega led to the overtime rule that we still abide by today, that has led to some of the wildest finishes in NASCAR history.
Coming up, we'll finish out the show reliving another Talladega Classic.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Before we head for the exits, we're dialing up the MRN time machine to take us back to July 26th, 1987. It is here that we will flash back to the Talladega 500, where Bill Elliott and Davey Allison put on a show in the closing laps.
That may be the situation here. Walker's caught outside the draft again in turn three.
And Davey Allison has taken over the number three spot. He's going to stay up on the top of the racetrack and try to catch Earnhardt. It won't work this time. He falls into line just in time as he shuts down Terry Labonte.
So Terry Labonte making the move along with Davey Allison. Darrell Waltrip running back in the fifth position. Right behind him, Cale Yarborough has tightened things up along with Lake Speed and Rusty Wallace. They can just draw a name out of the hat for this one as they hustle back to turn one. Five laps to go, the indication from Harold Kinder.
Davey Allison sitting in the third spot, peeks down underneath Dale Earnhardt, looks for a chance to make his move, but Earnhardt shuts him off there as they stay in single file. At the end of that eight-car pack, Lake Speed, he drops down to the inside, tries to make a move on Rusty Wallace. That, too, will not work.
Getting down to it, who is holding the ace up their sleeve, or are these front runners giving it everything they've got? Bill Elliott is still your man on the point.
No place for the weak of heart, either on the track or in the grandstand. This one is going to go down to the wire for sure. We've talked about the top eight. Well, then the ninth spot is Kyle Petty, and he's not far behind. So the top nine running almost under a blanket as they leave turn four.
Five laps to go with nine cars in that lead draft, just within about a half a car length of each other. Dick Brooks, you've been in one of these things a lot of times. Actually, right now, Dick, I guess everybody's afraid to pull out and make a move, particularly from third on back, and they're afraid they'll go to the tail end.
Well, I think from second or third forward, or second or third on back, you're for sure. You can go all the way to the rear here in a hurry. You have to try to buffalo your way back in. There's not many people going to give you much room right now. So if you get out, you can go back. And I don't know if anybody out there knows exactly what to do right at this point. I've talked to a lot of drivers, and I've been in that situation, and you just don't know. You're going to have to wait until the last chance. You can come from third or fourth all the way to first, or you can come from fifth. It's happened before where a couple cars in the front will double up, and the fifth-place car win the race coming down the front straightaway. So you just have to take your best shot. There's not much you can do about it. And I know it's on everybody's mind, is just waiting until the thing get ready to go. The last lap, they're going to see where they're at coming off the fourth turn.
Everybody will just kind of hold what they have for the time being. Probably the moves will be made that final lap. They're over in front of Joe Moore. A lot of strategy planning going on right now, Barney, as they come to the corner. Everyone guessing what the other driver's going to do. Elliott at the point, Earnhardt second, Davey Allison third, Labonte fourth, and Darrell Waltrip sitting in fifth.
It is Elliott, Earnhardt, Davey Allison, and Terry Labonte looks to the inside on turn three.
Working lap 186, and we haven't established a thing. Cars will work on the top. The same cars will work on the bottom. They're all over the racetrack in turn four. Waltrip is up on top. Labonte is on the bottom. They're trying to make it three wide with Davey Allison in the battle for four.
We can certainly be seeing the old NASCAR slingshot move coming back into play here as Davey Allison makes a move to the inside of Earnhardt. Through the tri-oval, the crowd roars, this Alabama partisan, as it's Davey Allison moving quickly up in a second spot. He's right behind the leader, Elliott, in one.
Allison takes the second spot, and Dale Earnhardt and Darrell Waltrip now battle for third. Waltrip down at the bottom of the racetrack, dead even coming off the banking, all trying to chase Bill Elliott. He leads them down the back stretch.
Davey Allison going for the deuce here at Talladega in 1987 gives chase to Bill Elliott. Elliott. Meanwhile, Labonte and Earnhardt and Waltrip not helping their cause as they battle it out for third.
They are side by side, and as a result, slowing themselves down a bit. Just the man coming out on the advantage with that situation is Cale Yarbrough, as he's moved the Hardys Oldsmobile into position number four. Set the clocks back about 5, 6, 7 years. That's the way they're running here at Talladega this afternoon.
Harold Kinder has a white flag. He'll put it on them when they come down this time. Elliott is a leader. A couple of car lengths back is Davey Allison. Right behind him is Earnhardt. They've broken away a little bit from the rest of the field. Fourth is Cale Yarbrough, a dogfight for fifth spot. Final lap, they're down in turn one.
Bill Elliott shows the way. The Ford of Davey Allison next in line as they go to the high side of the track. Around the lap car of Steve Trisman. Now Dale Earnhardt joins the threesome. They break away from the rest of the field. Off turn two, Elliott has a two-car length lead. Bill Elliott dives low on the back stretch. He's trying to break the wind. He's trying to break the air just behind him so Davey Allison can't close up. Watch out for Earnhardt in third.
Well, Davey Allison goes up just a little bit, and here comes Earnhardt on the bottom. Earnhardt closing in on Allison. Hold your scorecards. This one is going to go to the wire for sure. Elliott running the extreme low side. Allison is tucked in behind him. Earnhardt apparently ducks in as well. Elliott on the bottom of the racetrack in turn four.
Elliott trying to hold off the inside groove. Remember, the finish line is all the way near turn one. One more try for Davey Allison. He'll come up a car length short of Bill Elliott, who wins. Davey is second. Dale Earnhardt will take home third place money. And for Bill Elliott, behind those three cars, Cale Yarbrough, Darrell Waltrip, and Terry Labonte. And for Bill Elliott, his first ever Talladega 500 win and his second win at this racetrack after a victory in the Winston 500 back in 1985.
You can listen to that race in its entirety by subscribing to MRN Classics wherever you listen to podcasts. Our thanks to Austin Hill for joining us this week. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for joining us as well. Don't forget, NASCAR Live Wide Open drops a new episode on Thursday. We've got a jam-packed weekend of racing for you from Talladega this weekend, and we'll reconvene next Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of NASCAR Live. Until then, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.